welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Today we have a guest who not only has a lot of experience, but has a great amount of wisdom. Please welcome to the show Steve Penhall. How are you, Steve?
Good, thank you. That was a nice introduction. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Good. Steve, you told me about growing up in Huntington Beach, and you know, I live in L.A., and some of the stuff you told me, you know, the size and the way it was. Tell us a little bit about growing up.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm old, so you got to recognize this was just after the Korean War when I was born. Actually, I was born in the middle of it. But anyway, you know, Huntington Beach was kind of a three-part town. The northern part was a Standard Oil town, a lot of oil derricks and oil sumps and things like that. And then the north and the east and the south, I'm sorry, the south and the east were a farming community, and then we had the beach. So, you know, I grew up climbing oil derricks and playing in sumps and finding mercury and chasing combines in the bean fields and friends losing fingers and all those things that kids did before adult supervision was invented.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah,
and
it was great.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, it was great growing up there. I mean, one of the things my folks did was make me learn to swim very well. So I enjoyed the water, so I spent a lot of time in the water. Growing up as a kid, where we hung out, and so you know it was just natural. When it came time to get a job, I'd go to work at the beach, and so I worked at the beach through high school, and you know, when I left high school, I went to work in a marine hardware store in Newport Beach, which was really a great experience and really set me off on a little bit of a different hobby path, which was sailing. So, yeah.
Wow.
And,
that's great. Yeah.
So,
what did you like about sailing?
Huh?
What did you like about sailing? What did you like about it? Why did you?
Oh, just being on the water. I mean, the fact that you're that you know, the wind controls you. There's no power. So, there's a technical level of difficulty there that you have to overcome if you're going to get from one place to the other and get back safely and dock and all that kind of stuff. So it was always fun. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and you're dealing with Mother Nature too, which is
exactly.
Can be complicated at times. But yeah, it's a good feeling to go out there.
Newport wasn't too bad, but in San Diego, you were also dealing with the Navy, which was really interesting because they didn't like sailors.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
A lot of boats in San Diego. I couldn't believe how many there were. There's just a lot of boats there. So what happened? I know there's something in your life that was pivotal, kind of changed everything to you. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, when I was in, I just got out of high school and was working. Mm-hmm. I had needed to find a job. I always had to work, you know, a couple jobs because you can't make enough money when you're that age at one job. And so I was looking for another job, and I was waiting for a job to open up. So I went to work in a restaurant, and my father passed away, and totally unexpectedly. And mm-hmm. my mother, like a lot of, you know, women at that time, had never had a job, at least not since she was married. And so I wound up having to move back in with the family. I had a younger brother and sister and support them for a few years till they could get, you know, on their feet and get the kids. You know, my brother, he joined the Army eventually, and then, you know, my sister, we got her car and all that, and she kind of got on her own, and I felt like I could then go ahead and get out on my own. So, but I continued the rest. I continued in the restaurant business. It was kind of a fluke that I got there. Started as a dishwasher, and it was a nighttime dishwasher just to kind of, you know, get some extra cash, and started cooking and prepping and a lot of cleaning and things, and they kept asking me if I wanted to do more, and I said, sure, I don't mind, I always liked to work, and wound up being a cook, and then eventually they said, hey, do you want to, you know, get into management here and run one of these places? It was a pretty large chain, Farber Services. So when I was 20, I went into management for them and started running restaurants. And
amazing.
You know, that
amazing.
Yeah, it's been was my career path. I thought for quite a while. Stayed with them for quite a while, and then decided I was pretty smart. And because I was pretty successful at running a restaurant, so I thought, well, why should I do this for somebody else when I can do it for myself? And I went out and bought myself a bar. And the bar eventually wound up being the third busiest beer bar in Orange County, California. And
I love it.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. Listen, this was tough. I mean, I learned what, you know, back then, you know, you didn't have a payroll company. You did your own payroll. You had the tax schedule, and you had, you know, a hand-operated calculator. They just barely invented the handheld calculators at that time, and they were too expensive. So you were, you know, using a hand crank calculator and doing payroll that way and writing payroll checks. And people that know me know my handwriting's horrible, so, you know, that was a nightmare. But you know, that's how you ran a business at that time. But did well. It was really
you were
learning
everything from A to Z.
I had to do everything, including cleaning the bathrooms after everybody finished and everything. And it was really for my brother to, you know, kind of I was hoping he'd get set up in there and he'd run it. And then I'd go on to run, you know, other restaurants or larger, you know, operations or whatever. And all it wound up being was just I had two jobs. So, you know, eventually we both decided after, you know, a few years of being bouncers on Friday and Saturday night and you know, dealing with enough of it, we sold it. And, you know, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. And, you know, I was working, running a restaurant, but, you know, I knew it wasn't going to be forever. The guy was going to put it up for sale. So one Saturday morning I was sitting there, and a friend of mine called me and said, you know, we've got this opportunity in Colorado, invest in six hotels and restaurants. Would you be interested in coming up with us? And to my wife's chagrin, I said, sure. And so that was on Saturday morning.
She didn't like that.
What she said was, she said, you're going to do this, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, God. But anyway, what happened was we wound up moving to Cortez, Colorado, and had a restaurant, a hotel restaurant there. We just got married. My son had just been born. So, you know, it was his first, the first time we got there was in December. And so there was snow on the ground. He didn't know, you know, anything about it. He had a great time. And primarily because we'd just gotten a new stove and the box was still in the front yard. So, man, he had the best snow cave in the world. He loved it. Anyway, I spent the next 20 years raising my family in Cortez, Colorado. After we decided to sell the hotel and restaurant, I was looking for a job, and a friend of mine was a sheriff, and he said, hey, why don't you come to work for me? And I'd been working with the department for probably 5 or 6 years before that, because I have some interests that you know, coincided with their interests, and, you know, I had an interest in firearms and self-defense and things like that, so I wound up helping them with that. I also did quite a bit of rescue work and did some mountain stuff and things like that. And then I was a volunteer for the Colorado Division of Wildlife, and I did that for about 17 years. So this was all during that 20-year period.
Wow,
and,
that's amazing.
It was fun. It was great. And the kids, you know, growing up in a small town like that, we spent, you know, their weekends were spent camping and hiking, fishing and hunting and whatever.
Wow.
And a lot of outdoor stuff. So, you know, I felt like they got the kind of childhood that I had, which was pretty free. I mean, you know, we did a lot of crazy stuff, and they had that opportunity too. I went to work at the sheriff's office. I kind of worked my way up and eventually became a detective and then detective lieutenant. And one day some people came in and said, listen, these folks down in Toyoak want to build a casino. And the state does not want to regulate it. They want somebody here to do it. And literally, we're in this room, and literally they turned to me, pointed at me and said, you figure out how to do it. I was not a gambler. I'd never spent much time in casinos. And I really didn't gamble, so I didn't have any idea, any expectation of what was going to happen. But this was law enforcement, and it was really not much different than what I'd been doing. So I went to Nevada Gaming Control Board and went through their program and worked with those guys for a while and learned a lot about regulating casinos. Came back, went to Colorado Division of Wildlife up in Golden and spent a lot of time with them learning how to regulate casinos again and how they wanted it done. And came back, and we sat down, and we wrote the rules, regulations, and internal controls for the new Ute Mountain Casino. And I opened it as myself and the crew opened it as the first on-site regulators. And that gave the tribe a chance to get their gaming commission up and running. And you know, we set up the rules and things. So the gaming commission had kind of an easy time of getting started. Fortunately, they hired one of the best guys ever to be the executive director. So that was great. And that helped a lot. But, the year after they opened, we kind of phased ourselves out. And I said, you know, I think we can phase ourselves out and save you some money. And they literally said, nobody has ever tried to save us money. Would you want to come to work for us? And I said, sure, I guess. So that's how I wound up in the casino business.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah.
That's
Tell
me a little bit about how the whole hospitality thing shaped you, the whole experience before the casino, you know.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that I was very fortunate initially to go to work for a company, Far West Services, who had at that time I think they had 47 restaurants or 50 restaurants. They were Coco's, Reuben's, Reuben E. Lee, and I got a variety of experiences in with them. But they were very bottom line driven. They were very focused on training their managers to be complete store managers. You managed every single portion of it. And they did have a commissary, so we ordered a lot of our stuff through the commissary, but we still had quite a bit of...
What do you mean every little portion? What that means.
You know, food cost, labor cost, your paper goods, all your maintenance. You know, we did... I made a huge bonus one year because I did all the maintenance in the restaurant myself. And so you were responsible for making sure all that got done. And if you save money,
amazing.
Came to the bottom line. And I learned how to put
money
in
the bottom
line.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, and then having your own place, you know, dealing with all the things that go with that, including people stealing from you and you know, not showing up and the place you're getting in there at 5 o'clock and the place isn't even open yet, all those kind of things, you learn. It's kind of the school of hard knocks in that way, but it was a great experience. And then in Cortez the hotel, the restaurant, in a town that's totally tourist driven and very seasonal, to have to plan your expenditures and plan your, and again, this was a place where, I would come in the morning and I would open the restaurant, put out the money, I would be the cashier in the morning, the host, and I would help the cook when he needed it. And because in the summer we had a lot of tourists come in, but I just didn't have the workforce and I couldn't afford it in the winter. It was just me and a few people. But then I would go home as soon as lunch was over. I would go home. We'd have a crew come in and kind of clean up a little bit. The bartender would come in and he kind of watched the place for a while and had a cook and some wait staff. And then I would stay home. And my wife would come over, and she'd wait tables and kind of watch the place at night because we lived on the property. And she would come over and wait tables at night. And then when the restaurant closed, which during the winter was generally about 9 o'clock and in the summer about 10 o'clock, the bar would stay open, but I would come back. She would come home. We'd put the kids to bed. I'd come back, and then I would start cleaning, and I would clean – we had the dishwasher who would clean the kitchen and the stuff in there. I would clean the bathrooms. I would vacuum the floor. The wait staff would help me with that. So yeah, you just learn, how to make money, and we made money. And
that's
the key.
Steve, you've opened a number of casinos. Tell us what it takes and how do you make that successful?
Well, I have to say, all my success has come from hiring the best people. I'd like to take credit for it, but quite frankly, I've always been lucky enough to get to find great people to work with me, and they did great jobs, and my only job was to stay out of their way and let them do their work. And, I found my biggest successes were if I did that. There's certainly some things that you have to do. Communication is a key. And people think about, you got to communicate with your staff, but you also have to communicate with your boss. And it's surprising to me how many times I go somewhere where there's been no communication, no real communication with the tribe, the boss, or whatever. I don't know. There's a whole lot of things. I mean, people talk, one of some of the buzzwords have been going around for a while, strategic planning. And, come on, guys, you can do a strategic plan on the back of a napkin. The key is execution.
Yeah.
How do you execute that plan? And so many places you go to, you look at their bookshelves, and they've got three or four strategic plans sitting on their bookshelf, and not a single one of them has ever been executed. So focus on the execution, not on the plan. The plan is easy. I can do a strategic plan for any place in before lunch. But the key is going to be the follow through and the execution and the day-to-day, documenting of the the quantitative results that you got from that plan and making sure it works and then
mm-hmm.
tweaking it as you go along, finding out what's working, what's not, and how do I change it? So, I don't know. There's a whole ton of that kind of stuff that's been popular over the 20-some years I've been doing this. But for the most part, it really boils down to get good staff, train them well,
yeah.
treat them decent,
yeah.
and let them do their job. And they'll make you a star.
Yeah, it's about the people. It's about the people. So what are some of the qualities a GM needs, to be successful and stay successful?
Yeah, well, one of the first things is you got to know who you work for. When I went to work for the sheriff's office, I took an oath. And the oath was to serve and protect the people of the community. It was not to serve and protect the sheriff. And as it turned out, we wound up prosecuting, a portion of the department for certain things. But if my job had been to serve him, that had never happened. But it's to serve the people. When you're in business, you're for yourself, you're there to work for the patron. What you give that patron, they return in the money they spend in your business. So know who your customer is. But the thing about tribal casinos, when I went to work at Ute Mountain, a lot of these folks lived in truly third world conditions. I mean, truly third world. And I was able to watch from the money that we were able to produce and the investments that the tribe was willing to make, build really decent housing, give them quality. For instance, the only pool in the county that was of any use was the Toyoak pool, the one at the tribal headquarters. We all used it. I mean, it was they used that money to better their tribe. And what I saw was that, we were truly working for these people. The administration's changed, but we worked for the people. Well, the problem is, if you have that attitude, and I do try to have that attitude, that I'm there to work for the tribe and for their long-term, best interests, a lot of times administrations aren't, they're more focused on short-term goals. So, that's, you can kind of clash. So, I'm not as... I may not be as flexible at times as some folks might. And so I tend to get in trouble because, I've run restaurants and I've run casinos and I've made a lot of money for people. And when they say, well, I don't want it done this way, I struggle a little bit. So, you have to kind of find that fine line in there between, deciding who you work for and then getting it all done. Because, you might be right, but you won't be right there. So, one of the things that
it's a juggling act. It's a juggling act.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, the higher you get, and I've climbed that ladder, you know, and gone almost to the top, and, you know, but the higher you get on that ladder, the more rickety it gets. You're swaying pretty hard when you're up there, and you're struggling to stay on. And, you know, I found that I'm much better off if I'm not dealing with a lot of the things that come with that. So I really enjoy working with, you know, the you know, 250 to 500 or 600 person casino, where you can really get to know people and you can really make a difference for folks. Some of the things that I see and I've been lucky too. I've had some really good mentors. I've had some people who've taught me a lot over the years. And one of the things that was really drilled into me was the communication issue and how to set up a communication plan. So you really get the word out day to day, but you also get feedback. So, and one of the things I do that surprises me that a lot of people don't is I write a weekly report to my boss and then I distribute it and I make sure it goes out to, like, for instance, where I'm at now, I have a board of directors, 5 folks. I have a tribal administrator who works with the tribe and is actually our liaison to the tribe. And, so they all get this report every week that says what we did, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, what broke, you know, what's going to need to be fixed, what to think about for next year's budget, that kind of stuff. So there's no surprises. And when I go in to talk to them, you know, we can get right down to, you know, the nitty-gritty. Another thing that I've done with great success is people talk about employee meetings where, you know, you have – you know, a jillion people up there and you give this big speech and you say, well, they all feel good now. Well, yeah, but you got no feedback. So what I like to do is have, say, 15 people, one from each department in the casino, and if you don't have that many departments, then one from each shift in each department, and bring them in, feed them lunch, give them something nice, you know, have a gift for them, have a raffle, something so that they feel good about coming, but make sure they show up. And then sit them down and plan a couple hours, and I only ask them 4 questions. But I ask every single group the same 4 questions. And what are we not doing that we should be doing? What should we do that, you know, what is it we're not doing that we got to do? Number 3 is, what do we do so bad we should stop doing? And if you could do one thing, what would it be? And what's amazing is your employees are really smart, if you haven't figured that out, and they will tell you things. I mean, every single one of these meetings, there's an aha moment where they come up with something you can't believe they thought of and you didn't. And I write these things down. I write these things down, and one of the tricks is when I tell them right up front, you're going to tell me a lot of stuff today, and I'm not going to do anything about it. And they look at me funny, and I go, because, you know, each specific instance that you relay to me will be documented, and then when I've done this 4, 5, 6 times, so I've got, you know, 60 to 90 people's input, I'm going to put these in groups, and there may be a group, and then one of them's communication, one of them's marketing, one of them's fairness, one of them, whatever they are, and I'm going to group them, and that will tell you where your problems really lie, where your employees perceive your problems really. So, but instead of trying to solve each one of those specific, you know, complaints, you attack the whole issue. So let's say we have a fairness problem. Okay, we've got a fairness problem, and there's a perception here that, you know, one department or another department or somebody is getting way more than everybody else, and how do we address that? And find a way to address it. And sometimes it's just changing policy. Sometimes it's just, you know, looking at your pay scales. It's not a lot. And most of the time, quite frankly, it's not expensive, and it's not hard to do. And then once you do that, you solve that big issue. You've solved all those little problems. I've done this, and over a year or two, if you do this every couple of months, by the end of the second year, you say, okay, what are we not doing now that we should be doing? And they go, oh, I don't know. Could we change the ice cream? You know, I don't know. Could we, you know, I mean, the things get so minor, they don't have any issues because you have resolved the big issues,
amazing.
So now all the small issues go away. So, and I was actually taught that by a guy, Frank Biscara, and I'll tell you, it really works. It's great. So, you know, I could, you know, there's
that's
a ton
great.
Of that
that's
kind
great
of stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah, but really, you know, communicate, be transparent, don't hide anything. Don't have agendas, you know. Know what you're. Well, try to know what your boss wants. Every place I go to, the first question I ask is, what do you want from me? What are you expecting out of this, you know, relationship? And half the time they say, I want you to make money. Half the time they say, you know, I want you to do something else or this or that. But it's funny when they tell you, you know, well, I want you to make us a lot of money. I go, okay. And then when I come back 3 months later and say, listen, if you want to make a lot of money, there's a few changes you've got to make here. We've got to do some things differently. And they go, oh, no, we can't do that. So it's always interesting.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. Steve, what are the things that people need to keep an eye on in the casino business right now?
Oh, bottom line. You know, and I really get in a lot of trouble over this. I've fought with folks in commercial gaming but really the bottom line is the key for tribal gaming. And because you're trying to feed people, you're trying to get people medical care, you're trying to house them, you're trying to, you know, educate them, and that takes money. And the only place that money can come from is, and I won't say that everybody has that same goal, but I think a lot of the tribes have those goals, or most of them do. And so the only way that comes out is bottom line. And it really bothers me when they start moving into, you know, the commercial gaming lingo, and they say, well, EBITDA is the key. No, EBITDA is not the key. EBITDA is a banker's number that tells the banker how effective management is. But that bottom line is the money you can spend. That's what you can put in the bank. And then you decide how that money is allocated. You know, you use, you know, you make sure you use that depreciation to maintain the property. How many of these properties have gone years without a whole lot of, you know, and I can tell you a number of them that I've been involved with that were not maintained. So now all of a sudden you're going back to them and say, look, if you guys want to be in business for the next, you know, in the next 3 years, you got to make some changes here. You got to fix some stuff. And they're shocked.
Yeah.
And
but
I think one of the worst things that's happened in terms of tribal gaming businesses is the focus on coin in. Because although I had one manager tell me one time, a GM actually, tell me, don't talk to me about Theo. I can't spend Theo, but I can spend coin in. And after I quit laughing, I said, no, you can't. You can spend bottom line. That's all you got. And but, you know, coin in is a measurement of market share for these guys. So when the commercial casinos who don't get their money in the same place that the tribes do, or at least not most of the tribes, some of them do. But you know, they want to show market share. They want to show how they're growing compared to the other, you know, properties. What you care about is how much money you can put in the bank. And coin in is it can absolutely be you know, your enemy, because it decreases your net. And so,
definitely,
you know, finding that balance point, and I think you said it earlier, the balance point, there's a lot of balance points in this business, and finding those balance points, not just for, you know, your property, but the market as a whole, where are you going to wind up? I mean, that's really important to know, you know, what you can get away with, what you can do, and what you need to do. But also constantly focus on that bottom line.
Yeah, that's in the, at the end of the day, that's the name of the game, right?
Yeah, and that's where, you know, a lot of folks, oh, I get in trouble because I focus on the bottom line, I focus on the business, but I tend to not focus too much on keeping my job, so I wind up getting in trouble. I'm not the most political guy, you know. You know, you'd think I'd learn after all this time, but I don't get it. So anyway,
that's
whatever.
Funny.
You know,
we're gonna go ahead.
So anyway, just real quick. I think what I'm going to do, because now that you brought this up, I'm going to blame all that mercury and that oil stuff that I played with as a kid as my excuse. So how's that?
That's a good excuse.
Yeah.
All right, this has been great. Let's answer some calls here. Here we go.
Okay.
Hang on one sec. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta, GT Radio. I have Steve Penhall. Do you have a question for him?
Yeah, I'm curious if he's ever hired anyone who was on the run from the law at any point in their life.
Well, you know, it's funny. I didn't hire anybody, but I wound up working with somebody. And I was introduced to this person, and I go, I was looking for you. And this person said, yeah, I know, and you didn't get me. We started laughing. And he's one of the best guys I ever worked with, so it worked out great.
Well, Steve Neely, right?
Well, you did hire
Steve Neely, yeah. How are you, Steve?
Yeah.
Well, you did end up, I'm doing great. You did end up hiring the guy two other times, though, so it all worked out.
I did, so initially, but, you know, it helped that you were the best in the business, so, you know, as I said, I only hire the best, so, and you
well,
were
Steve,
in.
Well, you have to tell the story now because our listeners don't know what you guys are talking about. So go ahead,
okay.
Tell the story.
I'll tell my version of it. He can tell his. I was working one night on the road in a patrol vehicle, and there was a fight up in the forest. And so I go up there, and one of the things people don't understand about rural law enforcement is you don't have 60 guys to go with you, and there's no SWAT team. You just go up by yourself with a bunch of rowdy kids and expect to get your tail kicked. So you got to be a little diplomatic. So I went up, and there was a fight. There'd been a fight, and I said, "Okay, who was involved?" And it said Neely, and this kid was a really smart kid, a great athlete, but he had a reputation. You know, he was a tough kid. And so I said, "Okay." So I called the Dolores County Sheriff, and I asked where he was, and they said, "Well, he took off the back way to go home, and he lived in a different county, so I really couldn't go up and just pull him out of his house." And I called the sheriff up there, and I said, "Hey, if you see Steve Neely, tell him I want to talk to him." Well, the next time I got to talk to him was while I was introduced to him as a coworker. So anyway, yeah.
I don't remember much of that night. So.
Yeah, I think it was. I think I remember it was old. What's his name's tail you kicked? I don't think I remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the other thing about small towns.
He was hurting too, by the way.
The other thing about small towns is we all end up playing football against each other, playing baseball against each other, that we also end up at the same parties. And so you end up with some of that. But,
yeah.
You know, it all worked out. And I can honestly say of all the people that I've worked with in my career, I cannot name anyone that's had a bigger impact on my professional development and than Steve Penhall. And I'm grateful for all that you've done for me, Steve. And, you know, if you ever, you know, the other thing you said about coin in, you know, as a marketing guy, I can make coin in any number you want it to be.
Right.
Doesn't mean you're going to put any money in the bank, but I can drive
right.
some coin in for you. So.
Right. That's it.
But,
yeah. And it took a while for me to learn that lesson, but I learned it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But I just wanted to call in and at least say hi and give credit to Steve for all that he's done for me. And I'm happy for you to be back in New Mexico doing your thing, and I hope it's going well for you.
Well, thank you. You were truly the best marketing person I've ever run across. So thank you very much.
All right, we'll see you in a couple weeks.
He definitely is. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, Steve.
And he's a great GM, too. I've seen him work. I know him. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, he's gone way ahead of me. So anyway. Well, thanks, Steve.
Thanks, buddy.
Have a good show. You bet. See you.
All right. Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye. Oh, that was cool.
Yeah, it was great.
That was very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what we got here.
Hi.
Hello, this is Tina Magnetta. Do you have a... Hey, how are you, Haiti? How are you doing?
I'm so well. How are you, Steve?
I'm good, thank you.
This is Haiti and Tavana. Steve, my goodness, I've been on Tino's show a couple of times, and I don't think he's ever had a guest that has had so many lives as you have, okay? My
yeah,
goodness.
I've been there and done that, I think. You know, we didn't
and
even talk about We didn't even talk about my conducting the San Diego Symphony twice or, my horseback episodes or all that stuff. I don't know.
So I think an unrecognized person in all this, and I want to give her kudos, is your wife as well. I mean, I think she's really, you talk about her quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
As well through this.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Kudos to her, for being backing you up in all of these ventures. So
right.
I'm quite interested to know two things from you. And one is you mentioned the four questions that you ask people, which I absolutely love. Out of all your years of experience, what area have you found to be the one that is the most, where your most challenges come from?
Well, it's the people. I mean, I had a guy tell me once, he said, all my problems have hair on top. And to a great degree,
that.
I mean, I can, I've spent my lifetime studying economics and accounting and law and all these things. And I really, dug into some of these topics. I can't figure people out. I mean, that's tough. And so, I've only been able to just try to be as fair and honest as I can. And one of the things that somebody told me once and is that a lot of managers, one of the problems they have is what they call courage to lead. And that by courage to lead means that you do what has to be done when it has to be done. And I think all of us have struggled with that over the years. I know I have. But you get to the point where when you're dealing with folks, you have to make that have that hard discussion. You have to make that hard decision. You have to do those things that are really, things you don't want to do. They're uncomfortable. And I think that's a really important thing, because when your staff realizes that, and because it's tough for you and the person you're talking to, but when the rest of the staff knows that, look, he's fair, but he's going to make the tough decision and he's not going to get pushed around. So, let's get down and get to work and make this place better. I think at that point, that really makes the difference.
Love it. And you're saying about people, because I believe we're not in the hospitality or gaming or casino business. We are in the people business.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I'm interested also in terms of you talking about your focus has been on the bottom line and the balance between mm-hmm. that, because I've come across a lot of casinos, especially in commercial gaming. There's a lot of cutbacks, and one of the biggest cutbacks have been in professional development and training of staff. So how do you feel about that?
Well, I obviously, one of my great successes in my career was winning the Eureka Award at Sequan. Now, when I got to Sequan, they were number three in the market, and, without building anything, we were able to double their revenues and double their profits. In addition to that, we were able to turn it into a really good business. And I say we because I had a lot of help. And Sheila Howe and Kevin Vickery and all the Mary Meyer, all the John Dinius, all those folks who were there back then and helped us get where we were. But we did it through education, educating the staff, but mostly educating the managers and really digging into what it takes to be a good business, and then putting every single manager on the track to be the best manager they could be. And we won the Eureka Award in California, which is the highest Baldrige Criteria Award, and we were only within, a couple dozen points of qualifying for the National Award, which puts you up with the Motorolas of the world. So
wow,
and we're the only
fantastic
casino to have ever done it. So I really believe in that. I believe in it. But one of the problems you have, and, if tribal gaming tends to be, your lifespan there with a property tends to be relatively short. And so you don't have time to get these things rolling. And, I think they miss out a lot. This is going to be my second year at Black Mesa. And, one of the things I told them was this budget year, this coming budget year, we've got to look at employee recognition and look at employee, education and training. So, we wrote a new employee manual, and we put in a an education reimbursement program, and that we really couldn't afford at the time we put it in. We can't now, but couldn't then. And it just tells the employees that this is important to us and we want you to be a part of it. Now
right.
we're starting to get people responding and come back. So, one of the most important things in my life was my education, my continuing education, but,
yep.
in my kids' lives, when
yep.
I had to make that a priority and
yep.
get them through school without any debt was my number one, one of my number one goals in life.
Absolutely, and I saw that you got an MBA
great.
As well, so that's really interesting. Gino, one last question, because I find Steve amazing.
Sure.
I could hear him all day. As you know, Steve, I wrote the book Package for Success, and I always love to know from people like you, and you did mention one of the keys to your success was hiring great people. But aside from that, your personal success, what would you say one of the main keys were for you, how you packaged yourself for success?
Oh, in terms of packaging, I don't package well.
No.
I loved your book. But, and one of the things about it is, I will tell you, just to digress a little, I love the part about business etiquette and about the things that you need to do to fit in. Because having dealt with folks at every level from billionaires and, to, whatever, I know that there's a certain etiquette that is for everybody. And you have to treat everybody well. And that may be one of the things that I do okay is I try to treat everybody well. I know as a police officer, one of the things that people liked about dealing with me was I really tried to be honest and fair and truly fair, not faking it. And
right.
So that was part of my success there. I think
love
at the
it.
Casinos, the fact is I show up every day and I'm there every day to work for their bottom line and to make them here's the thing. At some point, casinos are going to become a commodity. There's going to be one on in every city, in every county, whatever. But they're going to be like bowling alleys. So
mm-hmm.
as when that happens, the competitive pressures are going to be very great. Your bottom lines are going to shrink. You're going to have to be a much better operator. And
mm-hmm.
if you're not, you won't survive. Well, a lot of these tribes really need to keep these businesses running to maintain essential services. And
mm-hmm.
that's always been one of my things is that let's try to set this business up. So no matter what happens, MGM comes across the street from you. You can keep this place open and you can provide those essential services to your folks, without a whole lot of pain. And that's a difficult thing to sell. So when everybody wants to build a new entertainment venue or they want to build a new steakhouse or they want to build a sushi place
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
Thank
oh,
you,
yeah.
Steve. Thank you so much. And I love your authenticity. Thank you for all of that. And thank you, Gina.
Thank you.
I enjoyed your book very much.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Awesome.
Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Great questions.
Yeah.
Right, see what we got here.
I don't know if I answered it, but...
Oh, you did, yes. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Steve Penhall. Do you have a question for him?
Hey there, Tino. This is Crystal from Detroit.
Hey, Crystal, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to say thank you for offering this opportunity. Steve, it's been great to listen to you so far in the show. We're big fans. I'm from an agency, so I ask for a little different question and a different perspective. Steve, thank you for taking my call. I have a question for you as it relates to the challenges coming up in gaming over the next few years. So it's kind of a double question, but then how you see agencies participating in your success and what you expect out of your agency.
Okay, which kind of agency? Marketing?
We sure are.
Pardon me?
We sure are. Marketing and advertising agency, yep.
Okay, good, yeah. No, the challenge is coming up. The competitive pressures, again, are going to get very great because, we are already seeing that in the East Coast, and we're seeing, legislatures talk about the expansion of gaming, the expansion of sports gaming, and so there's going to be a lot of pressure, a lot of competition for that gaming dollar. And, again, I think it's, trying to be efficient and trying to do the best job you can. As far as agencies go, one of the things about the casino where I'm at, for instance, is it's very small. And,
mm-hmm.
we can't afford the kind of, what it costs to hire an agency to do that. So we have to use our own, you know, devices and be inventive and creative and try to get things as inexpensively as possible. And I think if agencies want that kind of business, you know, they need to adapt too. I've had to eliminate, you know, two or three agencies that wouldn't. You know, they said, well, you know, you get what you pay for, so, you know, we're going to charge you this. And I said, well, sorry, but I can hire somebody locally and maybe not get quite that, but pay a lot less. And so that's kind of what my feeling was. Now, I've used great big agencies. I've used them, you know, with great success. And, you know, and some I've got some great friends who run agencies. But, you know, they have their place in gaming, and primarily I think it's in the larger, you know, facilities. You know, one of the things that you would, I guess, would be able to help at, I guess, is that, let's say, you know, a GM comes into a property and doesn't have a marketing guy. I didn't have a marketing guy when I got to Black Mesa, so I had to do it myself.
Sure.
You know, somebody that had the ability to come in and help me,
mm-hmm.
even in the short term, would make a lot of points. Because I had nobody to help me. I mean, I was just had to do it, you know. And you know, I kind of reached out and tried to find some folks, but I didn't. You know, there's not much out there in terms of, of marketing agencies that can come in and say, okay, yeah, we can help you get your mailers out. We can help you tier your database. We can help you, you know, design your layout your mailers, do your posters, you know. Give you some kind of theming on your billboards, things like that, but not, I guess I hate to say it, but not charge a whole lot of money. So find ways to do that.
Yeah. Partnership, more partnerships than necessarily vendors, but you're looking for some partnerships.
Absolutely. Okay. Partnerships are great. I love partnerships.
Well,
yeah.
Awesome. I have another question for you. What would say, who was your mentor and how would you describe your success through your mentorship?
Well, I've had a number of folks who have helped me out along the way, and you know, I've been in a number of different, I guess, career lines, and some of the things I've not mentioned. I mean, I always had two or three jobs when I was in my 20s, so, you know, I've learned a lot from different fields. I was in the construction business for a while, things like that, along with other jobs. I mean, while I had other jobs, while I was running restaurants, actually. But, you know, it wasn't until I got really to Cortez where I developed relationships with folks that you know, a friend of mine, Mike Shetler, the district attorney, George Buck. George Buck was huge for me. I mean, he changed my life.
Mm.
And because he had a way of looking things that was pretty no-nonsense. But, you know, I hadn't he was very strict about it, and I really enjoyed that. So George Buck, Frank Vizcarra, and Jean Greaves, who wrote the Emotion Intelligence QuickBook. She worked with me at Sequan for quite a while. She's still a good friend and someone I can reach out to when things are not going well. But Frank was former president of Worldwide McDonald's, and he beat me up. But I learned a lot from him. So, and then of course, you know, you learn. Jim Manoa at Pechanga was great. I learn also from all the people I work with. You know, I learn more from Steve Neely than I ever taught him, and same with Sheila Howe, or same with Zeke Perez, or all these folks. I learned so much from them. So, you know, you try to take it all, and you know. So anyway.
All right. Well, I appreciate your
thank you so much. Great questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you.
No problem. Have a good night. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Great stuff. Let's go to the next one.
Hi, it's Vince Manfredi. How are
Hello,
you?
Hello. We didn't catch that. Go, say that again. Yeah, we
Vince
can hear you
Manfredi
now.
Vince Manfredi calling on.
Vince, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. How about you?
Good, good, good. Did you have a question for Steve?
Hello?
Vince, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, we lost you there for a sec.
Oh,
yeah, go ahead. Say that again.
I hope you can hear me now. Steve, it's been really a pleasure listening to your talk. You had me when you started talking about your restaurant experience. I grew up in a restaurant, and I think it prepares you for a lot of things in life. You know, there's just so much going on. There's so many components. And in my case, it wasn't optional. It was a family thing. So, you know, we were working at a very young age.
My kids did too. My son and my daughter had to work in there. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep.
I was going to ask you if you've ever walked into dysfunctional organizations and how you fix those. But then when you spoke about the way that you put your groups together and the questions that you ask, it sounds like you're a very empowered and forward-thinking manager. And I'm just wondering why you don't think that could scale to a larger organization. Now you said earlier that you prefer to be in smaller groups with maybe 250 employees.
Well, I think I can do a lot of good for some of these. Like the place I'm at now, I think I can do a lot of good for these folks. I can put them on a long-term path to success that will allow them, to be successful for a while. And a lot of times you go to these bigger properties, wouldn't object to going back to a bigger property. I mean, I was at the fourth. I was GM at the fourth biggest property in the country. So I've done it. Yeah. But at that time it was the fourth. Not anymore. But
I think it's number one, isn't it? We're close.
No, I don't know. But anyway, there's so much politics involved. There's so much, and tend to have fairly large structures over the property that things you want to do you really can't do, and I'm not at a point in my life I guess right now where I want to I'm just getting old, crotchety. I don't want to have somebody tell me
I
have to do what to do with it when I'm going to look them in the eye and tell them no. If you want to make money, this is what you do, and they're going to tell me no. So and it's like I got to give you an example. I've been to interviews for these big properties, and you go in there, and one guy, I get to the point about halfway through most of these interviews where I go, I do not want to work for these people. There's 20 people around this table, and every one of them is going to think they're my boss. And so I'll blow the interview. I'll say something like, they'll ask me a question, and I'll go, no, I don't know. Or I'll say one of them, they asked me the same question, and they were clearly written by somebody for them, but they asked me the same question six times in a row, and I said, look, you've asked me the same question five times. If you ask me the same question again, I'm going to tell you the same answer. So just don't ask those questions, please. Well, I knew I blew the interview at that point. But, if you're going to go to work for those folks, what it's going to be like. I'm not politically correct enough to put up with that. I was a cop. I had to bounce in the bar. I had to, people tell, and I'm a little skinny guy. I'm not tough, but, you got to do what you got to do. But I'm not going to put up with that. I've made people a lot of money over the years, lots and lots of money. And, I'm kind of done with that.
No, I understand what you're saying. I've worked for small organizations and larger ones. And I think one of the things about a small organization is the group gets together, they decide to make a change, and you make the change. And you can move, in a bigger organization, there's just so many components and so many people that need to sign off. I can see where, programs get diluted even before they start. So I agree with what you're saying. And I've got a tactical question for you that's sort of talking about balance, especially when it comes to the slot floor and balancing out that against customer service and customer satisfaction. How does hold percentage factor for you in that dilemma?
That's a good question because I've been in three markets. I actually worked in Vegas too, but not as an operator. But Oklahoma, New Mexico, and California are totally different markets. So you have to take each individual market, in fact, each individual location, and to try to determine – how to balance your hold with your free play, because your free play is going to decrease your hold. So you have to have a target hold a true target hold, and it has to be palatable to the market. The market has to be able to stand it. And New Mexico is one of the most competitive markets, the Albuquerque area, in the country. And these people give away a ton of free play, unbelievable amounts. So trying to dial that back and then balance it with a hold that is good for them, but they're not going to realize that. They'll feel it over time, but initially you're going to take a hit. So it's a tough balancing act in every market. The thing is, and it goes back to the bottom line, is how much money do you need to make to keep the place operating and give the tribe what they need to sustain themselves. So, I think hold in a certain range is not something that a customer knows in the short term, but over the long term, they'll know it. So I tend to try to find that hold that fits with the right free play mix that you're going to give that gets you the bottom line. Now, when you go to Oklahoma, you can't do that because all your games are going to be somewhere between 1% and 4% hold, and you're just going to struggle to make a bottom line. So,
Right. That's interesting. Well, I appreciate your answers. I've enjoyed listening to you talk, and I wish you continued success. I know all about what it means to get old. I'm there myself. But I just enjoyed this very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, you guys.
Yeah, have a good night. Bye-bye. Any good questions? All right, see you guys here.
Yeah, that pre-play is
a tough
one.
Oh, this is Tino Magnetta. We have Steve Pennell. Do you have a question for him?
Okay. This is Kel Houston. And, Steve, I just want to say hello, first of all. But I got a kind of an off-the-wall question to put on the table here, and it's about tribal addendums today from the entertainment standpoint. Have you run into that very much in your travels?
No, I'm not even sure what you're talking about.
Well, what's happening today is tribal consuls are writing up their own addendums to challenge.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
I actually think I started that, but.
Well,
it's
nice going.
At Sandia. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's
sorry
one
about
that's.
That, Kel.
That's,
I mean,
that's one that's really a trouble in itself. And so it's numerous properties are doing this across the board now. And what they're trying to do is change the entertainment business. The whole process, and it's been a real challenge out there. And so I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Well, I got to tell you, working with you and Billy was one of the best things I've ever done. I mean, I talk about hiring quality people, and you guys are quality people. You did a great job for me. And then for a guy like me that didn't really know what I was doing, you came in and you helped me, you taught me, you know, you put together a great program. I think Sandia, the amphitheater there, the third year, was up for Country Music Venue of the Year for the whole country. I mean, so you guys did a great job. And I never interfered with the actual booking part in my addendums. My addendums were about what the groups ask for in terms of, you know, the liquor and the, you know, the red M&Ms and all the other stuff that they wanted. Alice Cooper's tube socks, which I didn't mind.
Right.
Actually, I went down and got them. But anyway, I don't know. I really couldn't comment on how they're trying to get into your actually booking process. I know I've seen some things that weren't quite square being done by some folks, but certainly not you or Billy or your folks. Or there's a lot of really good folks out there. I can't imagine why you'd want to mess with it too much.
Well, you know what it is it's a process, and it's new tribal attorneys coming in that don't understand the entertainment law portion of law. And so I've had a couple of incidences where tribal councils have tried to rewrite a William Morris contract. Oh my God, it's just, it's one of those things that is, it used to be a lot of fun doing this business, but now it's all back and forth paperwork with scans and changes and what's going to work and what's not going to work and finding a middle ground. And boy, it's like tribal councils today are drawing lines in the sand and the agencies are going, we're not going to bend to that. So it's like a rock and a hard place. It's a real interesting time.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I'm not right across that, and I certainly wouldn't be for it. But there are certain things that they're going to want in the contract, you know, their jurisdictions and things like that,
sure.
Which I think most people have agreed to, and you know, I think most people in the gaming industry have. That's all pretty common, but yeah, I'm not sure how I'd want to see. Maybe you could ship me one of those.
Yeah, I will. Well, next time I'm in Albuquerque, I'll ring you up ahead of time.
Okay, or just give me a call at Black Mesa or send me an email or something at my email address. I think you or Billy have my personal phone and stuff, so send it to me and I'll give you my 2 cents worth.
I appreciate it. It's
sure.
Always good hearing your voice.
Thanks
out
so
there.
Thanks so much, Ken.
You too, Cal. Thanks. I'll
Ken.
See you in a couple
appreciate
weeks.
It.
Okay, see you guys later.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Wow, some great questions tonight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some really, really great questions. Yeah, there are a lot of great people that call into the show. And I think we can take one more.
Hey,
hello,
Steve.
This is Tino Magnata. How about Steve Pinhall?
Hey, guys. It's Bobby Bryant calling from Las Vegas.
Hey, Bobby. How are you?
Doing great. Really enjoying
good.
The program. First of all, I wanted to thank Steve for stopping the Steve Neely crime wave. Somebody had to scare that bastard straight, or it could have gone really wrong.
Yeah, someone
yep.
had to hunt them down.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey,
that's
Steve,
funny.
When you were at Pechanga, you and Neely and I worked on a pretty grand scale promotion, but I was kind of curious through the years. Do you have any nightmare stories or about promotions or things that you thought were particularly clever or profitable?
Yeah, I actually got one coming up in November and December that I don't want to talk about, which is too bad because it's a great one. But I don't know. Promotions are tough. I'm. You know, the whole industry has moved more towards the direct mail and away from the promotions, and you still feel like you have to have the promotions. But I agree. I mean, I think they've gotten less creative. Neely did one way back when, which was get away with a year's pay. And that at that time had the magnitude of a year's pay. I mean, that resonated with people. And, boy, we just killed it. And he used that in 3 or 4 casinos, and I think it killed it every time. And it wasn't, you know, it didn't cost you that much money. I don't know. Trying to think what else.
Neely's always good for creative ideas. Do you have anything?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, one of the things
things
I thought of was at Sequan, my marketing director was notoriously frugal, and which was really good because that's why we made a lot of money. But he got our maintenance department to build a lot of sets for him, and he made up these promotional things, kind of like that, the mailboxes or all kinds of other stuff. And I'm not really good at that stuff, but he was pretty good at it. Alan Krantz He built a lot of stuff, and it wasn't expensive. It worked really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that good stuff worked good.
And Alan definitely loves frugal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Steve.
No problem. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks, Bobby. Thank you. Well, I think that's the last question. That's all we got time for, Steve. It's been absolutely spectacular show. Thanks for having coming on, and we hope to have you on again sometime soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Good. Thank
all
you
the
so
callers.
Much.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, some great questions tonight. People were really intrigued about everything. I really appreciate it, Steve. You have a good night.
Thanks, you too. Good night.
Take care. Wow, what a great guy. So much wisdom and so many great stories. So next week we have Jim Webster. Jim Webster is the GM of Ho-Chunk. Great story. He started in corporate America. Didn't find out he was native until later in his life. And then after spending 20 or somewhat years in corporate America, he he joined the tribe and the casino, and so he has a very, very interesting perspective on native gaming. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen to it. Everyone have a good night. Talk to you soon.